coals, please. Thank you, Unwer. Unwer just brought me more coals. Was that lame?
This is how we're starting the podcast.
I already started recording, so it might as well.
We're going to always edit it. That's fine.
No, it's okay. Anyway, so we have Anik joining us from Pakistan. Hello, Anik.
Hello, hello.
Anik just woke up. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, no, what time is it? Like 9
o'clock? I literally woke
o'clock?
Up like 10 minutes ago.
10 minutes ago. We have Anwer.
That's right. We do.
We do. That is true. We have Tariq.
How's it going?
And we have a new guy that we found on the street. You said your name was Faraz. Is that right?
That's the name I remember, yes.
That's the name you were told.
He's got a memento situation going on.
I don't know where I'm at.
That's a government name.
So what's going on, guys? What anything happened? I heard there was thunder struck in Las Vegas last night.
Well, thunderstruck. I don't know. That's just one way to put it, I guess. It's an insult to thunder.
Insult to thunder. So the Republican debate happened last night. And what did you guys think? I didn't get the anxiety that I thought I would, just because I felt like they toned it down just like a single degree in terms of the Islamophobia that I was expecting. What expectations did you guys have going in? Like, obviously, you sat down and watched it, or some of us did. Anik, what about you? What expectations did you have, you know, going in?
I think I was surprised on two fronts, probably. One, I was surprised because I was expecting someone... Well, I was expecting to be more Islamophobic than they were, so I was surprised that they weren't. I agree with you there. But then secondly, I was surprised because I was expecting someone to capitalize on Trump, jump in there and just rip him apart, and it just didn't happen. I kept waiting, and none of these guys really went after him, so that was pretty disappointing. So I was surprised / disappointed.
I love how, like, when you say disappointment, I felt the same way, as if it's a wrestling match, because that's how these guys behave.
Yeah.
You know, we expect them to, you know, oh, you should have taken him down, you gave him an opportunity, he didn't slam him. Anwer, any thoughts, like, what expectations you had going in?
I would say, I agree, I was expecting a very high degree of Islamophobia to be shown on stage, and I was disappointed in the level of Islamophobia in the debate.
It just goes to show you what we're used to and what we expect.
Oh, yeah.
It's like what the norm is in the past few months, that we've come to expect more, and we were disappointed that there wasn't enough, which, you know, we should not expect any. That should be ideal.
So is that the main thing that you expected for us? Like,
obviously I expected, because leading up to this debate and all that was going on and all these comments that were being made, I expected a lot more, yes, and I was just, you know, bracing myself for a lot more of that, but it didn't come. But even the amount that came was still uncomfortable for me, as it was for, I'm sure, all of us. But it wasn't there. You know, you saw comments by Paul Ryan and all of that condemning
Paul Ryan.
Rand Paul. You know, he was condemning those kinds of comments, and they were doing all these things before the debate, but within the debate, like Anik said, no one went after him.
I think for the most part that's strategic on their part, because they know if they go after Trump, Trump is going to do to them what he did to Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
Which is basically, he cut off his balls in front of everyone.
Bush is a bitch, man. Like,
he does that in every debate, and I wish... Like, Jeb Bush is from a powerful elite family. He doesn't have to sink so low as to go after this clown, for lack of a better term, you know, Trump. I expected him to heighten... You know, the discourse, to elevate the discourse. I don't know why. Perhaps because he has glasses on. That's why I thought. That's why I thought he'd be more decent about it.
Didn't work for Rick Perry.
No.
Jeb Bush just looked like he was getting owned the whole night. Like, he had this, like, aura about him, like, it's a little boy that wanted, like, go cry to his mommy because someone stole his ball or something like that. Like, he totally could have capitalized it. He could have made Trump look like, you know, this guy that's overreaching and trying to put him in his place. But he didn't do it at all. In fact, in my opinion, I think he did terrible.
I feel like, you know, as much as I'd like to see people put Trump in his place, you know, so much attention is given to Trump already, even by the moderators. You know, I think it's probably better strategically to just ignore him than to go after him.
So
he has a knack for, like, putting people in their place by not even saying anything intelligent, but just by being an asshole.
You know, okay, so something, even like the highlights from the previous debate that people didn't cover that much, Trump was saying something, not in last night's debate, but the one, like, a month ago. Trump started saying something, Jeb Bush wanted to interrupt him. You know, they interrupt each other when, you know, that's also strategic, right? Because they want to say, like, what this person is saying is not important, so they interrupt him. So Jeb Bush tried that, and Trump, literally, he just extends his hand, like his palm, facing Jeb Bush, and goes, hold it, and Jeb Bush kept trying to hold it, and then he stopped.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush got owned. He creates these scenarios where he allows himself to get owned multiple times, and he just doesn't learn.
I mean, there was one time when Jeb Bush was just trying, he was trying to say a lot of stuff, and, you know, Trump is just, I don't know, he's a genius in that sense. He knows how to, like, manhandle people. And, you know, he's coined this term low energy for Jeb Bush, which is stuck, you know, and he's making sure it sticks in. Like, he said something to Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush got all hot and bothered about something. Yeah. And all of a sudden he's like, hey, listen, I know you're trying to, like, build up the energy or whatever, but it's just not happening.
Like, I must have missed that part.
And then he does this other thing. The other candidates don't do it to each other. Only Trump does it to the people next to him. He kind of, he'll turn towards them and put his hand on their back like he's patting them. Like, good job, son. Good job.
Yeah.
You're a big boy now. You did good. You stood up for yourself.
Yeah.
Good job, boy.
Condescending move. And,
yeah.
It must be like a business sort of move.
He even said something like that to Ted Cruz. You know, he was like joking, patted him on the back, and he's like, "And you better not go after me." You know, like little comments like that are kind of like belittle the other person and put him back in their place.
You know, I think it really looked like there's something going on between them two. Like some agreement that they're not going to go after each other.
On what level, sir?
I mean, well, they're Republicans, so they're closeted about everything, so you never know. Well, what did you guys think,
I mean,
in terms of who came out ahead? Like who?
I think that the most solid debater on the stage by far was Marco Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
He he stuck with policy, and he sounded intelligent. He had a lot of things to say. You know, he didn't just come out there and insult people. He had, you know, he's like, this is what we're going to do. And they were plausible things that he was saying. Unlike, you know, Cruz is like, we're just going to carpet bomb the shit out of him. You know, actual policy.
So here's something interesting, though. When we talk about who won the debate, there's two ways to look at it. One is who won the debate in terms of benefiting themselves, and two is who won the debate in terms of stopping the momentum of someone else. Do you think Marco Rubio helped himself at all?
You know, I'm not really good at seeing it from that point of view, but I mean, I just look at it at who was the most intelligent debater and who brought the most to the table. That's the way I look at it, and for me, that was Marco Rubio.
And
as far as who's going to benefit the most, who's going to stop other people, I'm not really sure about that.
And Nick, what about you from your point of view?
Yeah, I agree with Unwer actually 100%. I mean, I think Rubio, to me at least, I wasn't expecting anything from him. I was waiting for Trump. I was waiting for Cruz. I wasn't really expecting Rubio to jump in there and, you know, like do something substantive. But he did. And there were a couple of times where I thought that he was asking really tough questions. I don't remember who it was, but one of the other candidates. And he came back, and the way that he responded just made him even stronger, in my opinion. So, yeah, I would definitely say Rubio won, hands down, in my opinion.
So I agree. I also think Rubio won the debate on substance. But I don't think he broke enough ground to where he would help himself, or at least help his poll numbers. In that regard, in terms of just keeping the momentum going in their favor, I don't think Trump won. I think Cruz won that. Like, he's ahead in the polls in Iowa right now, and based on last night's performance, I think he helped himself. But in terms of substance, you're right.
Cruz really did anything, though. Like, what did he do in the debate that made you think that he made his position stronger?
He didn't get into a fight with anyone. He didn't make himself look bad. He didn't get stuck on anything. I mean, he
got stuck on one thing, I'll say.
What did he get stuck on?
The carpet bombing issue. You know, the guy pinned him down, like, are you going to bomb cities that are under ISIS control where there are tons of civilians?
Yeah.
And you know, he wasn't really coming to the point of like, no, we have very select targets, and you know, he wouldn't really elaborate more on.
No, I agree.
In Shadow, you know,
in substance, Marco Rubio, like there was just no one else. Like on substance, yeah, but in terms of like the glamour of television, who I don't think that question hurt Cruz.
Yeah, and Cruz, in my eyes, and Cruz's campaign has a ton of momentum right now. Anyway, so I mean, he's definitely he basically just had to not screw up to keep it kind of going.
Sure. Yeah, that really annoys me because. One of the things that I find so annoying about Cruz, and it's just, I guess, aesthetically speaking, but you know, his face, other than that,
I swear to God, it looks like he wears eyeliner.
Dude, I want to know who does or doesn't do his eyebrows.
Yeah,
it's like he looks like a Muppet or something, like the Oscar the Grouch with his eyebrows all like.
But he also has this weird pause after every sentence, which really annoys the hell out of me because I want to punch the TV whenever that happens. I meant to do that last night many times.
He's on like 16.
He makes it really awkward too, right? It's like someone told him, "Hey, when you want to make a really important point, just stop for like 3 seconds and then say." Like you saw me talking, and then
you're like leaning into the TV. I'm like leaning into the TV for the next sentence, and it's just like,
yeah.
Come on, please carry.
Yeah, really. I waited 3 seconds for that.
But back to the Trump thing, the other thing that Cruz...
Well, Jacob, just to make sure I understand your point, you're saying that Cruz advanced his numbers or whatever based on the fact that he really didn't do anything, positive or negative.
Yeah, so basically, like, he's already on upward momentum, right? Like, the polls are already in his favor, and he's been, like, ticking up every few days. So the debate was his to lose. So if he did something that would harm him, it would reflect his poll numbers. I don't think he did anything that would harm him. Now, like, he helped himself by not hurting himself. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I don't really see how that advances him or, you know... I thought your question was, like, who, you know, is now basically doing better than they were before.
Yeah, so in terms of substance...
Do you think someone else did worse significantly to a point where by doing nothing he got better?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when the debate is yours to lose, the only way you could harm yourself is by saying something that'll end up biting you later on. And I don't think Cruz did that. Now, Marco Rubio also didn't do that. But he's not on an upward momentum. So Marco Rubio needed to say something that would break ground. And he didn't. Not because he's a bad debater. I think he's a great debater. And he's a lot smarter than Ted Cruz, too. Like, he knows the issues, and he actually talks about the issues. But they both needed something different. And even if they talked the exact same thing, because Ted Cruz is already on an upward momentum, it would help Ted Cruz more than it would help Marco Rubio. And Marco Rubio, you know, it's not... I wouldn't say, you know, he didn't help himself because he messed up. He didn't mess up. He just didn't... He didn't break ground. And it could be because... It might have more to do with the fact that there's so many other people on stage. And if it was one-on-one, I don't think Ted Cruz could hold a candle to Marco Rubio. Intellectually, I mean, Marco Rubio can go on all day. I disagree with him on everything, sure. But he could go on all day and convince you.
And would sound smarter than Cruz.
Always.
Yeah.
And look better, too.
Cruz, you know, you said you wanted to punch Trump in the face. I sometimes want to punch Cruz.
Trump and Cruz, both of them.
Yeah.
He just has this smug look on his face all the time.
Speaking of looks on faces, I think that Trump probably got hurt a little bit by them showing the responses of candidates when other candidates were talking about them and him making his little fish face all the time. Like, there's a lot of people online today, like, posting pictures of him, like, making his little, whoa, 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 you know, kind of, like, fish face. And I don't think that helps very much.
I think that'll... Okay, so... There's a political analyst mind in a lot of these politicians where they judge themselves. I don't think Trump has that mind. And I think he's just going to get happy at that. He's going, oh, look, people are talking about me. They made a meme out of me.
Yeah, that's true. More attention.
I'm popular.
Huh? Yeah. It's just going to make him more popular, yeah.
Even in the debate, he said, look at what you guys are doing. You know, he said it to the moderators, and every question is starting with Mr. Trump this, Mr. Yeah. Trump that. So he was annoyed at that, and he wanted to come back at them for that, but it looks like he was glad that everything's around him.
Yeah,
he's the focus. He even said that I'm the one in the middle. you know?
Yeah.
That's why I'm center stage.
Okay.
That's
and why I'm center stage.
His response to Jeb Bush's criticism that he's a candidate of chaos or chaotic president or something like that was that look, he kept referring to his poll numbers. He's, you know, his campaign is a mess. Look at his poll numbers. That's why he's saying these things. Nothing about the substance of, or refuting the substance of the criticism. It was more, it was just the cosmetic things.
True.
You know, his poll numbers are down. He sucks. He's weak.
He hasn't said anything substantial yet throughout his campaign.
You know, there's
lack of substance.
There is
a lot of sound bites.
No, no, of course, and that's what he's the master of, right. Sound bites, and I think he knows it. He knows that that's what the media and the electorate crave, just right. Sound bites, and but he does have substance to some things. We've talked about this before, right?
Well,
like his issue with trade imbalances. That's a real discussion.
Right.
He doesn't have that discussion. He just makes, you know, sound bites out of it. But that's a real thing that I wish. You know what was weird? When he first declared for presidency, I actually didn't know much about his politics. But I actually thought that there could be something to this outsider. That, you know, he loves talking about his leadership credentials and that he can take two opposing sides and bring them to the table. And I thought that maybe Congress needs that. That was until he opened his mouth.
No, man, don't you remember the whole birth certificate thing? Like, how after that could you take him seriously? Like, he swore that Obama was not a U.S. citizen. Even after he was presented with the facts, he still felt like Obama wasn't born in the U.S. Like, how could you go from that to, oh, this guy might be a reasonable guy that might be a decent president?
That's a very good point.
That's true.
He was the face of the birther movement for a long time.
Yeah, never mind. You know, I guess like what I felt was that the country needs someone new who's not so entrenched in party politics.
It's out of the bubble.
Yeah, out of the bubble. Okay. But yeah, no, you're right about Trump. Okay, well, Anik, who do you think, if you think anyone did, who do you think flat out lost?
Man, Jeb Bush was Trump's bitch the whole night, so definitely Jeb Bush.
Anwar.
Yeah, I would say Rand Paul, but Rand Paul is irrelevant at this point, really. So, out of the people that matter, that might have done something to help himself a little bit, I would say Jeb Bush.
I'll put it two different ways. So, I agree with him. Jeb Bush was made to look the worst. But I think as far as debating and trying to bring a policy, Carson was...
Well, I feel like Carson is in like a separate category, because I don't think, like, what would a good performance by Carson look like? It would look very un-Carson-like.
Exactly. Like, is he going to have a Carson. Detailed foreign policy discussion ever? No. Has he ever had one? No. Like, Carson did what I expect from Carson. I didn't expect any more or less from him, to be honest.
The other thing that kind of strikes me is how did no energy, the no energy label get attributed to Jeb instead of Carson?
Good point.
You know? I think Trump doesn't see Carson as a serious threat to him.
Yeah, that's why I feel like the two religious conservatives are Carson and Cruz. There's some, you know, conductorship going on from Trump. He was standing next to Carson. He was like, this man right here is one of the finest men I've ever met. You don't do that to someone, you know. It's because he doesn't feel a threat from him in the least bit. He doesn't feel Carson is a threat. This little, you know, invisible alliance that he has with Cruz, I don't get it. There is something. Cruz was pressed twice to go after Trump on something. Even explain in, you know, an eloquent way, if you could, a distinction between him and Trump. And he just kept saying that, oh, that's for the American people to decide. But he didn't have a problem, you know, disagreeing with Rubio on something.
Yeah.
Rubio is far down the polls. He's less than 10%.
Well, I think it's because just no one wants to attack Trump, because it's just not politically expedient for them to do it at this point after it's screwed other candidates over. Obviously, it hurt Jeb Bush and Rick Perry. And just pretty much anybody who's really gone after Trump has been hurt by doing it.
You know what I'm surprised at? Who, this one person that hasn't gone after Trump? Chris Christie. I actually thought Chris Christie, like, when the first debate was happening, after Trump was starting to tone down expectations, saying, like, I've never debated before, I thought Chris Christie was going to eat him alive. Because Chris Christie can be in your face, you know, verbally in your face.
The thing I didn't get was when I was talking about earlier when I said Rand Paul or Paul Ryan, but I was actually referring to Paul Ryan. You know,
Speaker of the House.
Speaker of the House. Because when you get such a strong condemnation from the Speaker of the House, very high up in your party, you would think that that would give some kind of, you know, go ahead to the other candidates to say, hey, you know, even the Speaker of the House is against this guy, we could probably go against him and have that support. And no one did that.
That's why I was a little skeptical.
Not just that, like Paul Ryan said it, but all of the other guys that are in the debate, they came out and said something about Trump, but now you're on the chance to do it on a national stage with everyone watching, and they totally didn't do shit. So that was like, you said the exact same stuff to the newspaper like a few days before that. Why aren't you, you know, just saying that again on a national stage, you know?
Yeah. So, who do you think lost the debate for us?
Yeah, it was definitely Jeb, and it was very evident, you know, because it was just those mannerisms that Trump had, like that. And you know, one of the things that I did like, and it had the effect that he wanted to have, but only for like 5 seconds, which is when Jeb said that, you know, to Trump, that you can't insult your way to the presidency. That got the applause line, and it was a nice thing to hear, but it literally lasted 5 seconds, and after that, Jeb was his bitch again.
Got it. What about you?
I didn't actually watch the
Okay. Anything stick out?
Like? Well, there, I know there's one thing. I'm probably opening up a can of worms here because I know we started this debate in another medium. But talking about Chris Christie, he talked about a no-fly zone over Syria.
Yeah.
And that he said, you know, if we establish a no-fly zone and Russia violates it, I will shoot down that Russian plane that violates it.
Yeah.
And I think that Rand Paul was correct to call him out as reckless.
Absolutely. That's a... I can't think of a more reckless thing. Okay, Russia, you know, like, they can say all these things about ISIS, and we're going to carpet bomb the shit out of ISIS, we're going to fuck them in their assholes, all the stuff they can say, get as raw as they want with ISIS. ISIS isn't, like, a legitimate organization that can refute at the UN or something like that, or call out past statements at the UN. You know, we didn't have treaties with ISIS. These people aren't even on the radar. Russia is. You can't talk like that about a country as powerful as Russia. Forget that they're powerful. There are allies in a lot of ways. You know, we have like this geopolitical chess game with Russia in the Middle East. Okay, that's one thing. Even Reagan never talked like this. This kind of, you know, warlord like blustering that, you know, I'm going to do it single-handedly, a no-fly zone. If he so much as dares, if he's as weak as our current president, he wouldn't dare fuck with me. You know, that's... shut up! Stop talking like this.
So, I know Anik's got to be chomping at the bit right now, so I want to hear what you have to say, Anik.
Okay, so first of all, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from my memory, they weren't asked if they wanted to place a no-fly zone, but the question was posed to... who was it that was asked? Christie, I think it was, right? If there is a no-fly zone in place, and if Russia violates the no-fly zone, would you shoot down their plane? And he said yes.
Okay,
wrong with that.
Oh, hold on. So there's something like preceding what you're saying. So a no-fly zone is something that would be instituted by a government. And the government that's leading the coalition right now is the United States, on, you know, on the side that's anti-ISIS and anti-Assad. Russia is on the pro-Assad side, anti-ISIS. It's complex in that sense. But if there's going to be a no-fly zone instituted, it would be instituted by the United States. So what Christie is saying, in effect,
obviously,
is that...
obviously, but they weren't asked if they would put a no-fly zone in place. They were asked if there was already a no-fly zone in place, and if Russia violated the no-fly zone, would you shoot down the plane? And I think it was more a question of, would you have the balls to do it? Like, would you, as president, give the okay to shoot down a plane in that specific situation?
Right.
I think that, at least that's what I got out of it.
And
all he said was, yeah, if there's a no-fly zone, absolutely, I'll shoot down the plane. What's wrong with that?
What's up with that is that you have to think about the consequences of that. It's not just about having big balls.
it's also about, you know, protecting the security of Americans. I mean, do you want to risk a war over a no-fly zone?
I mean, if... Okay, so I don't think it matters whether a no-fly zone is in place or if it's going to be in place. If it's in place, that means the United States placed it. And if the United States placed it, the president who placed it is saying, in this case, Christie, if he was president, he's saying that he will shoot down a Russian fighter jet. Now, okay, this actually happened a few weeks ago with Turkey. Turkey actually shot down a Russian fighter jet because they say that they were in Turkish airspace, and Russia denies that. But Turkey, you know, without sounding weak,
awesome.
Kind of...
I'm glad Turkey has bigger balls than you feel like our president should.
Yeah, but Turkey also apologized.
They apologize.
So, meaning...
I must have missed that. When did they apologize?
Like a day or two after it happened.
They said that they would do the exact same thing again if Russia violated their airspace.
Yeah, so, you know, this is like governments kind of speak out of both sides of their mouth. This is an example of that.
I never heard anything close to an apology. When did they apologize?
So, they didn't use the term apologize because they never will, right? These are strong personalities.
Okay, so what words did they use?
We regret that this happened.
Yeah, we regret that they violated our airspace, but if they violate our airspace again, we'll shoot them down again. That's not an apology.
That's like, you don't see how that's like a diplomatic way of saying that?
No, basically they're saying we didn't want to shoot it down, but we had to, and if they do it again, we'll do it again. I mean, I don't see that as an apology. It's more of a, we did it because we had to, we didn't want to.
I mean, do you think, you know, the idea, like the pride involved in maintaining your airspace is worth, like, going to war with Russia?
Dude, if you have that much pride and you don't want to go to war, don't put the freaking no-fly zone in place in the first place.
So you're saying...
If you put one in place, then honor it. What's the point of a no-fly zone if you're not going to honor it? Don't even put it in place.
But you're not answering the question, like... Is it? Let's say it's in place. It is in place, and we intend to honor it. But Russia is the one that violates it. You think it's worth the risk of going to war to Russia to maintain that no-fly zone?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what's going to happen next time when you put a no-fly zone in place, and you really mean it this time, and Russia violates it again, thinking that there might be some diplomatic way out of it, and then you shoot down the plane, and now there's this big misunderstanding, and now you go to war. I mean, you're risking war either way, whether it's now or in the future, due to, like, this big misunderstanding. Just have it clear cut. If you actually want a no-fly zone, put it in place, and if someone flies, you shoot them down. Like, I don't understand what's, like, so controversial about that. Like, it's pretty straightforward to me.
World War III.
Yeah, it's not controversial. It's about protecting the, you know...
So if you're worried about World War III and you're not willing to shoot down the plane, then don't put the no-fly zone. Just put in a, hey, Russia, please don't fly in this area. We would appreciate if you didn't.
You know, there
but
can
don't
be,
call it a no-fly zone and say that you're going to shoot them down.
There are levels of no-fly zone. It's not just like absolute nobody flies at all. I mean, there has to be agreements about how things go on in a no-fly zone. I mean, it's not just like straight up nobody flies. Like, that's the only thing. Like,
but it's also like you have to have some kind of warning system and stuff like that. You can't just say.
I think we're having the discussion assuming that we've had that discussion with Russia. Like, assuming that the no-fly zone was put in place and it was communicated to them that if you fly into airspace, we will shoot down your plane. Can we assume that that's the basis? I mean, if you get into the semantics of, you know, if this and that, then yeah, obviously a lot of stuff there. But assuming that it's in place, assuming Russia was told if they fly into airspace, we will shoot down their plane.
I still think it's reckless.
That's understood, yeah.
Generally, when, you know, airspace is violated, you'll send...
Is it reckless to do exactly what you say you were going to do?
You'll generally send planes to escort the violator out of the airspace. And that's why Turkey was reckless in shooting down the Russian plane. When they did, was because they said they sent warning. Usually what people do is they'll send their own fighters to escort the infracting plane out of their airspace.
So based off of that, do you see why some would think that it's reckless for Chris Christie to say that?
mean, sending a fighter plane to escort a Miles area, that's great, but if you told them that you're going to shoot down the plane and they fly in your airspace, then, yeah, I'm still okay with shooting them down. In fact, I would strongly advise or want that from president. And if they're not willing to, then don't put in a no-fly zone and don't tell them you're going to shoot down their plane. Because now you're showing weakness. Now you're showing, yeah, we told you we're going to shoot down your plane if you fly here, but we're not really going to always do it, and we can, you know, talk about it after that. Well, who's going to, like, take you seriously after that?
I disagree. I don't think that's showing weakness. I think that's showing wisdom.
Yeah.
I think that's showing restraint.
Restraint, yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's just Cuban Missile Crisis thing, too. I mean, if we didn't show restraint then, what would we have? You know, we'd have...
Yeah, I mean, we would just be going to war with everyone.
Yeah, so every time something small or small in comparison to full-blown war happens and we react harshly, we would be at war with everyone. So we have to have
diplomatic solutions are awesome. Diplomatic solutions are absolutely great. Of course, everyone would prefer diplomatic solutions.
No, according to you, you would want to shoot first.
No, I think what Anik is saying, and I don't think it's as important as Anik thinks it is. He's saying that if you're going to have a no-fly zone, then honor it. Otherwise, don't talk about no-fly zones. And he's speaking under the assumption that Chris Christie, if he's president already, he has instituted a no-fly zone. And if you're gonna talk the talk, then you have to walk the walk, is what he's saying.
But that's very, like, Sith-like, because, you know, only Siths deal in absolutes.
Which is an absolute.
Which is an absolute Sith.
So Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan is actually a Sith.
There you go.
He deals in absolutes.
Exactly. No,
Episode 7 twist.
I agree, Anwar, that he should not even talk like this, Chris Christie. You know, this is a country, this isn't like Guatemala or Bolivia or Romania or something where they can't say anything back. This guy could be president, and Vladimir Putin is still the president. He, in essence, will deal with this guy. And you can't just say, you know, Vladimir Putin is one to show up people. He outlasted Bush, and it looks like he's going to outlast Obama. And he's one to, you know, even when these guys are out, he'll talk about them. And so I don't think it's wise to engage that type of person in that kind of street language. Especially for president, but it's not surprising coming, you know, considering the party he belongs to.
Yeah.
That's just how. Can you imagine a Democrat talking like that? Jim Webb talked like that, and after the first debate, he was out. Yeah, he said it, and he looked awkward. So, anything other than that stick out to you guys? This is something that stuck out to me. Speaking of Chris Christie, did you notice how he kept referring to himself as, you know, when I was a federal prosecutor? Okay,
yeah.
For the first 7 years after 9/11, I was a federal prosecutor. He hardly mentioned the fact that he was a governor. Well, why do you think he didn't mention that? Anik?
I have no idea, but I have a feeling you do, sir.
As Saqib said before we started the podcast, when he was a governor, he worked hand in hand with Democrats, so he didn't want to bring up the fact that he was a governor because people would point out the fact.
I was just thinking that.
That he's working for Democrats, which is the worst thing you could ever do.
Hold on, give me about 5 minutes to research that on Google, and I'll get back to you.
Well, no, he was.
Or you could just tell us, Saqib, why?
Yeah, no, he was the governor of a reliably blue state. And he had to work with Democrats. They were in the majority of the legislature. And he doesn't talk about that.
He even praised Obama a few times when he was governor. So
yeah, for the Hurricane Sandy response. You know, there are all these pictures. If he's a nominee, it's not going to happen. But if he's a nominee, all those pictures are going to be used against him. If he manages to win a single state, the opposition within his party is going to use those images against him.
Yeah.
Why?
But he's brought it up himself in previous debates. I mean, he would say it proudly. I come from a Democratic state, and I still got stuff done. Like, why do you feel like that's something he's ashamed of, or is it intentionally not bringing up? I've heard him specifically bring it up.
In
the
debates?
Republican Party doesn't want to hear that.
Well, hold on. Anik, you've heard him say that in debates?
Not this debate, but I've heard him say that in previous debates, yeah.
So I've never heard him say it in a debate. I've heard him say it plenty of times in speeches, in smaller gatherings. But when he's Sunday on the stage,
talk shows,
yeah, on talk shows, Sunday morning talk shows, he's talked about it. But he never brings it up when the other candidates are random, because that's something that they're going to hold him accountable for not being reliably conservative.
I feel like I'm pretty sure I have heard him. I don't know which debate it was, but it always comes up when it gets into a discussion of who gets stuff done, or like first-term senators and stuff like that. He always would mention, you know, that I'm always someone that gets stuff done. If you look at my state where I came from, you know, blah, 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 Democratic. I'm pretty sure I've heard him say it in debates before.
It's definitely an asset for him. It's definitely an asset.
Well, I mean, it's an asset for him, for the sane voter, but the right-wing voter probably looks at that as a weakness.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Ted Cruz would just pounce on him.
Work with Obama? That's like, he's the Antichrist.
Yeah, the first 2 years Ted Cruz was in the Senate, he was responsible for the government shutdown because of his filibuster. If Christie brought that up in front of him, which I don't think he has, otherwise, I don't know, maybe he has, but I feel like that's something Ted Cruz would just pounce on. Although Ted Cruz has been playing it safe. Anything else stick out to you guys?
I think you might be right, Saqib, but except for the fact that I've heard him talk about it. If I hadn't heard that, I would understand why he would want to not bring it up in the Republican like primary debates. But I think it could help him like down the line when it's just him versus a Democrat in a presidential election. It would probably help him being able to work across the aisle and all that. But I've heard him say it, so I don't feel like he's intentionally leaving it out or anything like that.
Or you think it's intentional that he's just doing it now, but we'll start to mention it, you know, that he is capable to work with the other side, later on.
Yeah, I mean, I could see maybe, like, let's say I heard him say it in the first debate, and someone came back to him and told him, like, hey, that's not helping you, let's go ahead and not keep mentioning that, and then when we get down the line, it's you against Hillary Clinton, then we'll harp on that more, I could see that.
So, the other things that I thought was really interesting was the entire tenor of the debate was centered on terrorism, and there was absolutely no mention of any other forms of terrorism, especially domestic terrorism by any non-Muslims. When we had some in the news,
what other kind of terrorism is there?
Right, according to the Republican Party, there is none, but. So, but that was pretty interesting that the only thing that was mentioned was France and San Bernardino. What happened to
Planned Parenthood?
Planned Parenthood, I mean.
And not just terrorism. I mean, the debate, my understanding from the beginning of the debate was that the topic was supposed to be security, not terrorism.
Yeah.
So security involves, you know, gun violence in general, not just, you know, terrorism-related gun violence. And there's been plenty of gun violence going on in America not related to Muslims.
So this is what really confused me about the party. Did you guys catch any clips of the previous debate, like the JV, where the only three candidates?
I saw a few minutes of it.
You saw a few minutes. Okay.
No, I didn't know.
Lindsey Graham said something really nice. Like you remember I was talking that time about he didn't say enough. Yeah. Okay, he went above and beyond.
Yeah, I remember exactly that time, sir. Did you say enough to meet your specific requirements this time?
This time he went above and beyond.
I didn't see the JV debate,
that means a lot coming from you. He must have really been on point.
I saw Lindsey Graham on a talk show the day before, and he probably said the same thing in the JV debate.
No, I remember that talk that he said. I think it was on Morning Joe or something. Yeah. He went above and beyond, and it almost looked like he was getting emotional.
Oh.
So he kept saying, you know, I mean, I don't remember his exact words, but it was perfect. He kept saying, leave the religion out of it. You know, we have good, you know, American Muslims who are helping us in this fight, et cetera, et cetera. And he said
the same thing on Morning Joe.
Yeah, yeah. At the debate, it was different when there's other candidates, although it was the JV debate, but still. So I give him full props for that. He didn't have to say that.
Well, he also doesn't have anything to lose.
I would love to see Lindsey Graham in the regular debate. Like, kick out Jeb Bush. He's not doing shit. You know, kick out even Rand Paul, who has no chance. Get out one of those guys out and stick Lindsey Graham in there. I'd love to see him, you know, stick up against Trump and some of these other guys.
So what I don't get about the rest of these guys is, this is how politicians speak from both sides of their mouth. Okay, on the one hand, they'll give this small, you know, Ted Cruz, yeah, there's Muslims that are, you know, peaceful, but we gotta fight radical Islam. Islam, radical Muslims, Islam, Muslims, Islam, Muslim, Islam, Muslim. Yeah, there's some that are good, it's not all, but we got radical Islam, radical Muslim. What? How? I mean,
it's the same
do
thing
they have two brains
Trump,
or something?
It's the same thing as when Trump was talking about the illegal Mexicans coming through. There might be some good Mexicans that are coming through, but most of them are rapists and murderers. And
well,
it's the same kind of...
he didn't exactly say it like that.
That was the implication.
So it's like they say something, and then their base hears what they...
That's what he said. They're all rapists and murderers, and then people were like, well, what do you mean all of them are... Well, I'm sure there's some the good ones, but most of them. That's what exactly it was said.
Yeah, it was definitely implied that the majority are.
I'm going to channel Saqib's cynicism from last time and say that maybe Lindsey Graham is saying all these things because he doesn't know... He knows that he doesn't have a shot, and he doesn't have anything to lose, so it couldn't really hurt him. So he'll speak his mind, or maybe he'll say things that, oh, you know, I'm gonna be.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel like.
Jaded socket right
like,
now.
No, I definitely feel like Republicans have that edge to them, that they're okay with selling out just to say whatever they have to say to beat each other to get to the top of the, you know, right wing crazy. I don't feel like Democrats are like that, even though they have that ingredient in them, you know, being a politician. To say what their audience needs to hear, but I don't know. I feel like Democrats have a stronger limit.
Less negative attacks.
I'll say one thing about the, you know, the insistence of most of the candidates to stick with the party line words, radical Islamic terror. They insist that Obama call it that, and. Somehow that is the key to actually defeating. Like if ISIS hears the President of the United States say radical Islamic terror, they're going to be like, oh shit, you know, they know what we're up to. Counter weapons. You know, they figured it out. Run. You know, like, how is that supposed to stop it? Like, okay, fine, whatever you want to call it. Like, the main thing is, what are you going to do about it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Another thing is, and there's with that and with they talked a lot about destroying the caliphate in the debate. These two things, I think, are actually, I agree with President Obama that they shouldn't use the term radical Islamic terror, and also they shouldn't call it the caliphate, because the thing is, like, you're legitimizing ISIS when you do that. Like, if you call them the caliphate, then you're telling other Muslims that's your caliphate around the world, who don't necessarily agree with it, you know what I'm saying? But you're actually legitimizing it. So I strongly disagree with that.
So I've given this example to people that if I just started, you know, like if I wore a big white hat and I had some followers and I called myself the Pope, and my followers call me the Pope, and then on TV, you know, if things got violent or something, people on television are like, we need to fight the Pope. The Pope is evil. We need to fight the Pope. And if I called my house the Vatican, so we need to destroy the Vatican. So, okay, this word you're using actually means something to people.
Right.
Don't associate it with the thing that it actually represents. So my question is, are they doing it intentionally? I think they are.
Well,
I think
the challenge you have there is, I mean, they themselves call themselves the Islamic State. I mean, how can you call them something other than that? You know, what do you call them?
Like, don't call them the caliphate.
That's the thing they call their organization, you know.
Yeah, so if
call
I...
Call them Daesh. Yeah.
Right, call
don't
them
give
Daesh.
Them legitimacy that they're trying... They're trying to give themselves legitimacy by calling themselves Islamic.
Yeah.
You shouldn't play into their hands by following their playbook.
And that's, you know, Kerry's strategy is to call them Daesh to illegitimize them in the Middle East.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think Republicans do this intentionally to fan the flames of Islamophobia. You know, they like to pick on this...
It's intentional on both sides. You know, obviously ISIS is using it because they want the marketing, they want the recruiting or whatever from using Islamic, and then Republicans are using it to fan the flames, so it's working.
Right, and what they don't realize is they're giving ISIS, like, all the legitimacy that they want
on the same side.
I mean, ISIS
almost.
Is kicking their ass. Like, they're giving in to ISIS everything that ISIS wants them to do.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that's what they want. They want a clash of civilizations, and the Republicans are
giving
them.
Well, that's why Trump is being called White ISIS. Wisis.
Somebody watch The Daily Show.
Yes. Religiously.
So, something that none of us have talked about, and I think it's interesting that we mentioned practically every candidate's name except Carly Fiorina.
Oh, another person's face that I can't stand.
What do you guys think about her?
Irrelevant.
Say that again, Nick.
Like I said in the group chat we had going, every time she starts talking, I just take like a little mental power nap. Like, I don't know. I just don't think she has any like serious shot at winning it, and I don't really take anything that she says that seriously. So,
there was an article.
I don't really pay attention to her.
PBS put in that article. They always do like a fact checking the debate, you know, the day after. So they fact checked her claim that Obama is not talking to tech companies about how to fight ISIS or whatever, and basically that's completely untrue. And she just tried to pretend like, oh, because I was a failed CEO of a tech company, you know, I would be able to talk to them better or whatever.
Well,
know,
she said that she was in direct contact with NSA.
Yeah,
oh,
just ask. Just ask.
Just ask. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask. And if they say no, I'm going to say please. And if they still say no, I'm going to say pretty please.
By the way, that article you were talking about, I don't have good internet access here, but if you could put, I mean, there were a couple of really good things in there. Like, one was that whole thing with Fiorina, but there were two or three other cases where the candidates were, like, specifically ripping on Obama or talking about a policy, and their policy was basically what Obama was already doing. So it was just kind of hypocritical. I don't know if you could pull it up while we talk about other stuff, but there was some pretty good points in there.
So she, I mean, you know, something interesting scares me about her. It's almost as she is more so than any other candidate willing to say anything. Like, she doesn't care about the truth. Can you push that a little? I feel like the noise is... Just push it back a little. Sorry. So, yeah, so they've all been caught lying about things. But she's the only one that gets caught and then repeats their lies.
They don't care.
Well, she had a kind of a big shouting match with Cuomo on CNN the other day, and, you know, that went viral. But basically he was telling her that everything that she's been talking about, those Planned Parenthood videos, were edited and out of context and things of that sort, and she just wouldn't listen. Like, it doesn't matter. I know what I know. Like, so the inability to...
That's true. She knows what she knows, that she's not going to change her mind no matter what.
Well,
that's like 90% of the Republican Party.
Right. The inability to use facts to form your opinions or change your opinions is what scares me the most about...
She would do this thing that was really, really terrible on her part, which led right up to the Planned Parenthood shooting. Those videos that came out, they were all doctored. Like, it's been proven through and through over and over. There's no point in discussing that on television. She would still use the term butchering babies. The videos where they're butchering babies. And I don't think... I mean, this
I
is...
feel
this
she's
is
directly
when,
responsible for those attacks.
I mean, I don't know if she's directly responsible.
I mean,
but
that kind of hate rhetoric... You know, it's been proven time and time again. I mean, you know, O'Reilly's done it. A bunch of people from Fox News have done it. And they've been proven that their rhetoric during that week or during the 2 weeks prior to those attacks was what caused it. And the perpetrators even say, like, yeah, I've been watching Fox News all week.
Yeah, and then,
you know,
like, and then some and people on Fox will be like, well, what are we supposed to do? Just not say those things? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Don't say
yeah, stop
things.
Talking like that.
Yeah. That's.
I mean, there is such a thing as like a civilized discourse. It's not good for their form of television, but it's good for society.
Right.
If they just stop using those words. And I don't think her...
It's not good for... They wouldn't have a form of television. I mean, they don't do legitimate reporting. They wouldn't have anything to do if they didn't do what they're doing right now.
Yeah, and when she talks about being a tech CEO, I don't think tech CEOs, they're not like developers.
Yeah.
In the sense, like, you know,
she know about technology.
Yeah. Did you notice she kept using the word algorithm?
Yeah. I don't know if she.
They didn't have the right algorithm. Give me a chalkboard. Let me write the right algorithm. She doesn't. I mean, she's just using that word to sound techy. You know, just to get that. Get that vibe.
Like you said, they know management. They need to know how to drive their stock prices up and
stock valuation is the job of the CEO.
Right,
and I'm getting a phone call.
Can you put that job on silent?
Anik, are you back?
Yeah, sorry about that. I just disconnected. I'm back.
Okay, that's okay.
There's another candidate we haven't talked about yet. I'm gonna call him from now on Hong Kong Fui.
Who's that?
Karate Chop.
You're right. I love that guy.
I don't love him after the debate. I wasn't very impressed with what he had to say. It's good that he called everyone out a few weeks before everyone else was calling Trump out.
He's talking about John Kasich.
But, yeah, I didn't agree with much else of what he said. Aside from he did... You know, say that it's important to reach across the aisle.
He was much stronger in the first of it. Yeah. Last night's was not a strong performance at all.
I barely even
noticed that he was there.
Is he exercising while he's, you know, like, right.
He's showing decisiveness.
That's a sign for decisiveness.
Like, is that natural or do you think that's trained? He's just going overboard.
I think maybe somebody told him, like, do this hand motion every now and then, and he just went wild with it, you know? It kind of reminded me of who is it? I think it's LL Cool J. I don't know if you've ever seen him. He hosted, like, the Grammys or something. He hosted some award show, and the dude won't stop licking his lip. He keeps going, like, sucking on his lower lip. It's like, dang, man. Like, somebody needs to tell him, like, that looks weird when you do it that much, you know?
Oh, LL, that's been his MO from, like, ever since he started.
The first time
they've been making fun of him for decades.
Yeah.
I've actually seen people do impressions of him like that, yeah.
That's been always his thing.
So that's Kasich's version.
But Kasich, I think he's overall a decent guy, and that's probably his greatest weakness.
He's too nice.
His decency, which I actually wish the American presidency would be known for. Just being look like your neighbor down the street. That's what John Kasich looks like.
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, Benjamin Franklin originally
wanted. That's why people voted for Bush, because he was like the guy that you wanted to have a drink with and, you know, your buddy.
Right, but I don't want a dumb president. So I want my neighbor to be a president, but a smart one.
Smart and nice.
Yeah,
smart and nice. I mean, okay. Also keep in mind that Bush 2000 campaign was different. You know, pre 9/11 Bush was different than post 9/11 Bush, and I, you know,
you want the neighbor that you're going to go to for help.
Talking about pre 9/11 Bush, then obviously.
You want the neighbor that you want to go to for help, not the one that you're going to avoid because they're going to ask stupid questions. But that's the kind of, you know, I want my president to be smarter than me. You know, approachable is nice and all, but I don't really care about that.
So with Kasich.
Yeah, after Bush, I lost the whole approachable nice guy thing.
So originally, Ben Franklin, like the American bird is the bald eagle, right? Mm-hmm. He wanted it to be a turkey.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
I thought that's so telling of what, you know, the vision that he had for the American presidency. Of course, he didn't want the country to be weak. He wanted the country to be strong. You know, at that time, we had gone through so many wars with England. So he wanted a strong presidency, a strong federal government, but to have the image of humility. That was his intention. And I thought we don't have people like that anymore. Even Obama's not like that. Or is he? Do you think he is?
But it's always about tough talk. Because if you don't talk tough, then you're just not strong enough to be the president of the greatest country in the world. That's what you have to be. The exceptionalism comes into it. No,
right,
exceptional.
Right.
So we have to have an exceptionally strong president.
The last president that we had that was like a humble guy.
I think Jimmy Carter.
Carter was definitely humble.
I obviously don't remember Carter's administration before.
Well, neither do I.
Like,
I mean,
like he probably was humble. Anyone that we can remember, like in our lifetime.
H.W. Bush.
Yeah, H.W. Bush wasn't that proud or anything.
Although I do remember seeing speeches of him, you know, before the Gulf War, saying we're going to get Saddam. Like, he was called Saddam.
That's pretty cocky, man.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
a little nitpicky though.
Correction. I do think in his personal life he's a humble guy. Like,
compared to
not cocky at all.
Son, I mean, he's as humble as they come. What we saw from W is crazy.
So the apple fell way too far from the tree. I actually think Jeb is more like his father.
Yeah, the Jeb thing is, I expected completely different Jeb than I got. And, you know, the whole talk when W was in line for the presidency and all that was that, it was really supposed to be Jeb, but, you know, W took it. But because he's the smarter one, Jeb's supposed to be the smarter one, but we're finding out completely different now.
Well, no, I do think, I mean, if you had a simple policy discussion with the candidates, one-on-one, no talking points, just policy, I think Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio I think they're the only ones that talk about policy.
So are you saying that he just folds under pressure in terms of in front of the camera, or?
No, because it's different. I mean, when you're on a stage with eight other people and you have, okay, you know, what are you going to do about education? You have 30 seconds, go. You know,
I disagree with that.
That's not how you
answer. Because there was, when he got cornered about, oh, how would you know if families are coming over here are Christian or not? Oh, you would just ask them. You just kind of know. What kind of question, what kind of answer is that?
So No, you're right. So that's not a policy, discussion. That shows
me his intelligence level, and that can inform me about his policy decisions too. Or is he not good on the go?
Yeah, no. You could be like bad on the fly with giving these soundbite answers, but good at policy. I think Obama to an extent is like that. Although he's very coached, he's very trained, he's very restrained with his words. That's why he doesn't make crazy statements. Even on the campaign trail, he never made crazy statements. But he's measured in his words. But the real Obama you see when it's like a long discussion. When he's giving like an hour long interview or 30 minute long interview, if you notice, like even his interview with Mark Maron, like the first 5 minutes of that interview was all talking points. Once he got those out of the way, then he just kind of, he opened up and he was just having a policy discussion. So you guys excited for Star Wars?
Can't wait! Can't wait! What a segue!
What a transition!
Yeah.
Yes. That's what we really should have been talking about the whole time.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
That's true.
There's one guy that I know that supposedly read a lot of spoilers. I don't know if he actually did or not. I guess not. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a fan of... I've been trying to avoid... I've been avoiding social media, but I've been... Anytime I see anything about Star Wars, Force Awakens, I'm kind of like, read one word at a time, see where this is going before I...
There's something I actually shared an article on Facebook and I tagged you in it.
That's a really long article. I didn't read it.
But you understand the gist of it.
I was telling you.
That's why I tagged you. Yeah. Talk about what that article is about.
Well, okay. So there's a friend of mine that a long time ago.
And pass me the shisha while you're talking.
I think we might need more coals, man.
Did you say more coals, please? Actually,
more
no.
Coals, please.
Someone already bought. Or brought
a long time ago. These are almost gone, man.
Anyway, we'll have someone bring coals.
So, so what my friend told me, and I realized it's actually very true. Like, if you learn about, like, tasawwuf, I'm not going to say Sufism. Well, I'll say it. But Sufism, just for the sake of everyone to understand it, like, it kind of has a lot of similarities to...
What is Sufism? I mean, people have this idea when they say, it's the mystical side of Islam. What does that mean exactly?
It means that... So there's no Sufism without the mystical side and, like, the real world side of Sufism. But basically, it's very steeped in, like, asceticism... selflessness, always doing things with the right intention, focusing on your inside, what are your intentions, why are you doing what you're doing, and that's what being a Jedi is all about. It's like, don't ever attack out of aggression, out of anger, out of fear, because if you do it for that reason, then you're going to go on the dark side. And that's basically like, following the nafs or shaitan, in Sufi terminology, as opposed to doing something, for the sake of Allah, which would be the
force,
the good side. Well, it's both the force.
Right.
Yeah. The force is strong with Shaitan on the dark side.
So would he be Darth Vader or the Emperor?
He's definitely not Darth Vader, because Darth Vader turned in the end. Probably the Emperor. No, he would be like in the background somewhere.
Like the Emperor.
He's the Emperor's master.
Well, the Emperor, yeah.
He's the Whisperer.
He came forth.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Have you thought about that, Tommy?
I have not.
Sufism and Jedi.
And also there's like a lot of lore, about Sufis who have like abilities, like telekinesis and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Although,
and also like the dress, like they wear the robes and everything, looks very like West African,
Yeah, no, North African. Yeah.
North African, sorry, like from people in Morocco and stuff like that. So there are a lot of parallels. And that article, he talks about like that George Lucas actually went to go talk to like a Sufi order to do research on how to make the Jedi and stuff.
That's interesting. So Jedi's are Muslim. They're the true Muslim.
Yeah.
Interesting. What else, guys?
Just can't wait to see the movie.
Already. Did you ever watch the third part?
No, I haven't.
Episode 6, Return of the Jedi?
What did you think of episodes 4 and 5?
So, episode 4, and it probably, the critique is based off how old it is. Mm-hmm. Like, just the age of the movie and the lack of, you know, like, contemporary acting skills, I didn't enjoy episode 4. Episode 5 felt like just a breath of fresh air. Darth Vader was a lot more intimidating in episode 5 than he was in episode 4. Luke Skywalker had better acting. The actors looked more comfortable in their roles. Luke Skywalker wasn't such a bitch. So I enjoyed episode 5.
I believe that the reason why Luke Skywalker seems like a bitch in the first one is because they really wanted to show the transformation over the movies from bitch to Jedi. You know? And you have to have a bitch to see. You have to be able to see his transformation through the movies. Yeah.
Also,
you really do. In Return of the Jedi, that's when he like hits his peak of Jedi.
So is he like a completely different person?
Yeah, some parts, yeah.
Okay. I just attributed it to, like, 70s acting.
No, I don't think so. I think he was coached to act that way.
Okay.
There's a lot more Obi-Wan than, you know, Luke at that
point. Yeah, and when you see him in Return of the Jedi, he's, like, he acts like a Jedi. Like,
especially at the beginning of the opening scene is pretty
badass. Yeah, that, and then, like, when he goes and talks to Darth Vader before, when he turns himself in. So there's a part where, I mean, it's been 30 years. Who cares if you know?
I have a 90-day rule about spoilers. If you haven't seen a movie within 90 days...
Well, then we're way past that.
Yeah.
So he goes to turn himself in to Darth Vader because Yoda tells him on his deathbed that, like, you're not a Jedi yet.
Yoda dies?
Yeah, Yoda dies. It's been 30 years. So he tells him on his deathbed, because he thinks, like, oh, so I'm... Because Yoda tells him, like, you know, all the training I can give you, I've already given you. So Luke is like, oh, so I'm a Jedi. And he says, you're not a Jedi yet. You have to face Darth Vader. Then you'll be a Jedi. And so because of that, Luke wants to complete his training, so he goes and turns himself in to Darth Vader. And he tries to turn Darth Vader back to the good side, like just talking to him. And just that whole discussion when they're talking to each other and everything, it just shows a whole different Luke, you know. He definitely is acting like a Jedi at that point.
Well, something I thought was the most interesting, you guys hyped up the fourth movie so much, and you two fell asleep.
Oh man, yeah, I passed out. And there's so many bleeps and bloops throughout that movie. listening to R2-D2.
We all hyped it because you hadn't seen it. That's why we wanted to make sure you were excited for it and you were starting to watch it.
You guys have seen it.
I mean, we've seen it.
I've seen it at least 40 times.
Yeah. You probably saw it the day it came out.
The only one of us that was alive for us.
I was like 1 year old, I think.
Yeah, you probably did.
Shit.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of us were not even...
Let's move on past this point.
The rest of us were not even born when Return of the Jedi came out, so...
Yeah, I was born in 1989, so...
Damn it, you're young. God.
Wow.
Almost the 90s.
Yeah, December 25th.
Anik, what do you think?
84.
What?
Huh? What did you say?
Anik, did you watch the movies? I know you bought them.
That's what year I was born. Never mind. No, I didn't watch any of them yet. It's a mix of electricity problems and DVD problems. So
you've seen
DVD
Star
player
Wars.
Problems. So.
You've seen Star Wars, right?
No, I haven't seen it at all.
So.
Which is why I could not contribute at all to the last 10 minutes of the conversation.
The farting djinn is leaving.
It was a djinn.
Goodbye, djinn.
Goodbye, Omar.
The international call is killing me. I can barely understand what y'all are saying. Y'all are making fun of me. Go to the house.
No, it's not you. It's not you.
There was a djinn in the room.
Okay, then don't go to the house. I take it back.
We were saying that there was a djinn in the room that left a nasty smelling present.
He left an audible present. That's recorded.
Yeah.
Playback to take over.
Someone farted, is what he's saying.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's not anybody that's been talking. It's a gin that was
in. That was
it. It was now wet. So what else? Didn't you have something else?
Yo, Sakib, are you going to touch on the whole internment camps point at all or not?
Oh, okay, yeah, let's talk about that. I said, yeah, back to... Well, that's what else was on the list.
Oh, okay.
So this is a fear that I have that... And it's based on the kind of language that Ted Cruz has been flaunting. And it's not even as if he's reluctant... He's afraid. He's like, it's not. He's like, I'm afraid that we're gonna have to take steeper security measures. He's just flaunting. He's like so. He gets so excited. He gets a boner every time he says like radical Islam.
Like, yeah.
That I feel like he's just gonna keep pushing the envelope, and in order to either not backpedal on anything, or just to make himself seem more strong, or maybe he just really believes this. He is going to be okay with internment camps for Muslims. And when I say internment camps, I don't want to bring up the image of like the Japanese internment camps. What I mean is like Guantanamo Bay, but in the States, in that you can have very weak accusations against you. You can be at the wrong place at the wrong time or not be able to recollect, you know, where you were at a certain place and time, or can't explain associations. That's enough for you to go to a separate prison.
That's very McCarthyism, like you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Cruz or Trump, I don't think Trump is as coordinated as Cruz is, but Cruz, I think he's taking the country down that path,
or has the potential to do it.
Yeah. Does that make sense, Anik, or do you disagree?
You cut out there for a second, but I completely disagree. I mean, we've talked about it off air as well, but I don't see where you can. Like, they've never even mentioned internment camps at any point. You're taking stuff that they've said, and you're assuming that, well, it's going to keep getting worse, and it's going to keep getting worse, and eventually it must be internment camps. I think that's a pretty big leap of faith. I personally wouldn't take it that far.
Well, I mean, so we have historical examples, and I know it's a rash example, but, you know, Hitler never talked about concentration camps in his campaigns. Or, you know, leading up to the actual events itself, the language would—it was just building up to it.
He was just wanted to make the country great.
He was
right, but I mean, it's two different things. I mean, like, I can give you a million examples of where someone didn't talk about something and then they did it. Yeah, it happens all the time, but that doesn't make it fair for you to say it's probable. It just makes it fair to you to say it's possible. Yeah, well, maybe it might happen. There might be internment camps 5 years from now, but for you to sit there and say, well, I realistically think 5 years from now this is going to happen, I don't think that's fair.
I'm not making like a prediction that it will happen. I'm saying that I think it could happen if Cruz is president. Like, okay, do you think Cruz wants to close down Guantanamo Bay or keep it open?
I don't know. If I had to guess, keep it open.
Okay. Now, based on what you know about him, do you think he's okay with it being the way it is, or does he want to maybe expand it?
I don't know. Maybe expand it.
But the key is that what I think Saqib's trying to get at is we form our judgments of these candidates by the rhetoric that they have, their actions, their words, and the words that are coming out of Cruz's mouth tend to lead us into this situation where we think that he would be perfectly capable of doing internment camps.
And I think in his mind he would justify
it. Okay, so tell me, what has Cruz said that made you think that if he became president 5 years from now, we might have internment camps?
So it's not specific sentences that he said that would lead me to say, like, he's never...
You're saying that. I'm taking stuff that he said, and I'm based off of that assuming that it's fair to assume that he might lead to that kind of point. Well, what is it that's making you feel that way?
It's his insistence on using the word, you know, radical Islam, radical Muslims, over and over, even when the other candidates are you know, using restraint.
The difference between Cruz and Rubio, like Rubio actually did say that there's many peaceful Muslims. Cruz hasn't said that, I don't think. I didn't hear
it. He said it, but it was like really, really lukewarm.
So that's the thing.
Like, just really reluctant to say it. Like he's being forced to say it.
Right. He hasn't said what? Could you repeat that?
I mean, okay, so Rubio, you know, has, when he talks about foreign policy, he's talked about forming coalitions with the Arab world. And he also mentioned Muslim communities in America, forming coalitions. Okay. Cruz is not interested in forming coalitions one bit. He's focused on isolating the enemy and using these really general terms that can be, you know, applied to everyone that belongs to the religion. And he's okay with that. And I think he's smarter than that. And I think he knows exactly what he's saying. And when, you know,
I don't disagree with anything that you just said. But what part of that leads you to think that there would be? I mean, yeah, okay. So he's very anti-Muslim. He's said all this stuff. But to me, that means, hey, he might want to monitor us more. Hey, he might have the NSA focus on us. Hey, he might restrict the visas for Muslims coming into the country. Hey, you know, all this other stuff is realistic, but where are you getting interim accounts from?
Okay, so those things that you said he might do, those things happen now, right? There's a visa waiver program, whatever, all this stuff. Those things happen now. Masjid's being monitored, you know, Muslim families' homes being tapped, you know, FBI agents infiltrating masjids to try to get people to say, those things already happen. So with Cruz, he's criticized all those things as not being enough. So his thing is that he's going to take it a step further, another step further, another step further. So eventually, I think separate camps where Muslims, specifically Muslims, will be held on, you know, weak charges. I think that's where it leads to. And maybe that's not even the end goal. That might not even be the end game. That's something along the path.
Again, we form our opinions and judgments on what people say. So take Bernie Sanders. I mean, he has never said that he will never institute internment camps, but would you believe that he ever would? You know, so it's the same thing. Like, I know Cruz has maybe never said that he would do internment camps, but his rhetoric leading up to it.
Do I think Cruz is more likely than Bernie Sanders? Yeah, of course, he's more likely. But do I think that it's probable or very likely that under Cruz that we'd have internment camps? That's a huge, huge, huge leap.
I feel like
you were talking about how Cruz, you know, he talked about the stuff that he feels that we're not tough enough on, right? Well, I mean, I'll agree with you. He might say that, but I don't think you can jump from that to internment camps. Like, yeah, maybe he thinks we're not tough enough on the refugees and he would allow no refugees in. Yeah, maybe he thinks we're not tough enough on immigration and he would want to build a wall or what, you know, things like that. But I don't think, considering they've never mentioned it and they love talking about, you know, I don't know how you can jump all the way to the very extreme, which is internment camps.
Personally, like, I mean, I kind of agree with Anik in a little bit. I don't think it's about one candidate per se. I think it's about how people are responding to. Well, specifically, it is kind of about one candidate, Trump. I mean, what Trump said about not letting Muslims in the United States. I mean, sure, a lot of like people in the Republican Party. A lot of people in the Republican Party. Denounced him for that, but you know, there was a time when it was unthinkable that a presidential candidate could say something that inflammatory and still be a candidate, let alone be the front runner. You know what I mean? He's still the front runner despite saying that. So there are things that are being allowed to be said by candidates, and there are vast numbers of people in the country that are supporting these things. And you know, if that's the wall that we're breaking down now, and that's the way the pendulum is swinging, that's the way the momentum is going down the road, next election cycle, the one after that, let's say there's been a few more attacks, a few more people have died, what are people going to be willing to support at that point? And I think that could eventually lead to internment camps at some point down the road.
Okay, but it's two different things. Like, hey, it's going in that direction. It could or it might happen versus, well, I think this will be probable, or I think this is very likely. I feel like you guys, or Saqib at least, we're definitely leaning towards the very likely. If Cruz becomes president, and if Trump becomes president, it's very likely 5 years from now that we would have interim accounts.
No, that's I mean, I think we should go from very likely to
wouldn't be surprised if it happened.
Okay, that's not what I'm saying. I'm in the camp that says that...
Don't say that.
Yeah, right.
None of us are in camps.
No, I'm on the side that I agree with what Anwar said. Yeah. Is that based on the rhetoric and pushing the envelope further and further with every speech, it's leading in that direction. Is it going to happen? I don't know. Is it going to happen in 1 year, 2 year, 5 year? Is it going to happen at all? I don't know. But what I'm saying is that it's leading in that direction.
One thing I wanted to say real quick, you know, this election cycle is really weird in the way that, you know, every time Trump says something outlandish, you would think that that would be the death of his campaign, and yet he continues to, you know, move forward. If you guys remember what happened to Howard Dean back in the day, you know, why did he lose all support? Because of this one yell that he had. And that was...
Because Democrats have high standards.
Right. Yeah, that. And then now, just the other day, I'm hearing Trump actually curse that they had to bleep him out on live TV. You know, like, so when, if, just imagine if in that instance, like, if a Democrat had done it, you know, a curse or whatnot, then, it would have been the end. That was it. So just in that way, I think Trump keeps on defying the odds. And to a certain extent, I think that the other candidates were mirroring him. So they were seeing, like, okay, well, he's going to misstep here, misstep there. And he didn't, and he's still going strong. So we're going to try to say the same things. You know, we're going to try and agree with him a little bit. But then he went too far, and then they started denouncing him. Yet we didn't see any of that in the debate last night. But, you know, he went too far with the whole banning all Muslims, and everybody started denouncing him left side or right side. But before that, he would say, you know, all this anti-Muslim rhetoric, and other people would kind of chime in and say, like, yeah, that's not a bad idea. You know, that because he wasn't taking a hit in the poll numbers. If he did, they probably would have distanced themselves from that kind of talk beforehand. Just this past thing, they've denounced him because it's just, they thought, I think they made a calculated move that this was over the line and they would oppose him, and it still didn't work.
No, in fact, I mean, I think a majority of Republican voters agree with him. There were some polls that came out. I mean, he's just preaching to the choir.
No, but Republicans do agree with him, and that's what he's catering to in the country. 2/3 of the people don't. You know, the polls show that 2/3 of the people don't want to ban all Muslims. In the country, as well.
Oh, okay.
But Republicans, of course, their own party do agree with that.
So I mean, that's
a scary number.
Yeah.
That means 1/3 of the country does want to ban all Muslims.
Yeah.
1/3 of the country wants to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. That's scary.
That's a big number.
That's something that hasn't existed until now. And if I mean, that just means that that's the way that things are shifting. Yeah. You know, and if it keeps going that way, well, then I mean. I think we all agree that it's possible.
Yeah,
based on how things are going, that it's possible.
The only thing I would say is, if any of these Republican candidates get elected to the presidency, some more so than others, I'm really seriously looking into moving.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, it's a fear thing. It's like just the fear card that they're playing now. I'm fearful for my life, for my livelihood, for my family. If they're in power, because I don't know where they would stop.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. If I could see, okay, they'll do this, this, and this, but I don't think that they'll ever get to this drastic step. I'm like, you know what? I'll deal with it. I've dealt with racism, you know, since 9/11 or even a little bit before that. But this would be above the line, like, you know, over and above everything that I've ever experienced.
I will say one thing I think our strongest ally on this issue is are the Jewish people in this country.
Yeah.
And they came out in force, you know, speaking against what Trump said. You know, like when Mark Zuckerberg put like a very, very nice post on Facebook, you know, about how it's precisely because he's a Jew. And
yeah, I love the fact that he added as a Jew.
Yeah.
That just added a whole other dimension to it.
Oh yeah, I mean he painted this
picture of like, look, I'm opposed to this because I'm a Jew, and I know our people have been through this before, and we're not going to stand for anybody going through it again.
That was awesome.
For their sake, and because once you start with one group, who's next then? Mm-hmm. He said, like, it could be us next, so why are you going to let it happen to this guy? You know, you got to speak up at the beginning, not right. Wait until, you know, they came for that. What was that quote? You probably know that quote.
They came for the socialists. And I didn't something because I'm not a socialist.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It keeps on going, and there's no one left at the end.
Yeah. A lot of truth to that. So yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, Jewish people have a lot of political sway in this country, and I think they might be what saves us. You know, they might be the people that save us because we don't have a voice. You know, but
I think Jews as a voting bloc have more like regarding foreign policy. But even now, I don't think it's as much as people. You know, people have those conspiracy theories that it's the Jews controlling everything, or even like.
Well, I mean, that's all BS. But
yeah,
I'm just saying, like, you know, they do have a lot of political sway in this country for as small of a minority as they are. Certainly, compared to Muslims, you know, we're about the same in numbers, but you know, they have much stronger voice. You know,
Florida, New York, and California.
And if they're going to stand against that type of rhetoric, then that bodes well for us. You know. So I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, it's no other reason. I mean, Jewish Americans obviously have a much more heard voice in Congress. So if something were to happen, and if Jewish Americans in AIPAC or whatever the lobby group is were to stick up for Muslims, then that would be a huge. I mean, the only thing better than that would be if the NRA stood up for you, but that'd be a pretty huge deal.
Yeah. So what else we got?
So what do you guys expect next? So there's one more debate. So between now and then, in terms of like repositioning themselves, the first state is going to determine a lot. I think you'll see a third of these guys drop out after Iowa. So who do you think is repositioning themselves, and for what end game? I know Cruz is under the assumption that he's going to win. And I think that's a fair assumption. I think he's got the evangelical vote. Which is really all you need to carry Iowa.
I mean, you have what, the three-way race right now?
I'd say it's just a two-way race.
So Rubio's not in it at all.
I mean, he's under double digits. I don't think. I mean, you can tell.
Really, he's under double digits in the last poll.
Yeah.
That was like
single digits. I mean, the highest he ever got in Iowa was, I think, like 13%.
I thought it was 13, 14,
But I think he's back down to like 9% now. He's 9% nationally, too.
Wow.
So I don't think that's going to... Unless something happens where he just starts gaining momentum...
Have people not seen Cruz speak? How is this possible?
I mean, it's like this. This is the way I see it. If you're one of those people that gets fooled by charlatans... And there are plenty of people like that. I think those people love Cruz. Yeah. And they'll just... I mean, when he smiles, he just emanates of, like, fakeness.
Yeah. But it's also their guy, because he's the evangelical.
I don't even think he's really religious. I mean, he's just a great salesman. A great salesman.
I wouldn't buy anything from him, man.
What do you think, Tarek?
I definitely agree with that. And he's also espouses sort of the same anti-establishment type stuff as Trump does, but without, I guess, being quite as radical as Trump is for the Republican Party.
I mean, he's been in the Senate for a short time,
yeah,
and he uses that as his, you know, anti-establishment card.
And like, you know, he kind of carries the Tea Party stuff more than Rubio does, even despite them both kind of having similar roots, but...
I feel like Rubio, as soon as he got elected, he kind of stopped caring about the Tea Party, which I say that to his credit, because he started working with Democrats. I mean, he's a conservative, he's a Republican, you know, he's a savvy politician, but he did start, you know, the so-called Gang of Eight, where they're trying to rewrite the immigration bill. Mm-hmm. That says a lot. I mean, Cruz hasn't done anything like that, reaching across the aisle, and he's kind of proud of that.
Yeah.
I just wish that Trump would fail on soon with the lack of, you know, his policies, initiatives or anything like that. Nothing substantial. I love the, you know, people love his sound bites and all that, but I just want people to see through that BS and see the fact that he's all talk and nothing else.
I mean,
when it comes to most subjects in the...
A part of me feels like he couldn't have built what he has built, hotels, whatever, that's it, golf courses. But a part of me feels like he couldn't have built it without having some form of savviness, whether it's, you know, diplomatic savviness, savviness.
Have you seen the meme that he could have made $10 billion, just made $2 billion, if he had just put it in money market accounts?
Right. If he had taken his inheritance or whatever and just put that into different types of...
So I don't know if he's such a great businessman.
He would have made a lot more money.
That they claim that he is.
I mean, when I say great businessman, first of all, I don't mean great businessman. He was given like $1 million from his dad. Or what was he, like $200 million, right?
No, it's just $1 million.
$1 million? Just $1 million. But, I mean... I
took a small loan from my father.
Yeah.
Those times are tough.
Times are tough. I didn't know how I was going to buy my own plane.
Loan from your daddy.
No, but, I mean, to have built something from it, good or bad, takes some, you know, technical skills. Like, even like I opened a yogurt shop with my family. Even that took some, like, I had to know some things. And so to be able to build the things he's done in foreign countries and
got more money than me, so I guess that's good.
What I'm saying is that he has something.
Okay. He has something. I mean, he's not a complete buffoon. Otherwise he just would have squandered all his wealth away. I mean, I agree with you.
So,
but
I mean,
he's not a complete buffoon, but he's not exactly like Warren Buffett or any. I mean, he's not like Warren Buffett's on the investment side, but who's a big, like, he's not like Mark Cuban or, you know, he's not like a business tycoon, in my opinion, like a business genius. He's just a guy who got pretty lucky, who's not a complete dumbass and didn't waste all the money, although he went bankrupt 5 times.
I don't think you have to be a genius to be like a great businessman. Like, I don't think those two go hand in hand. I think you can have a sense.
Well, he's thinking not at these hotels. You have like a manager for each property. You have, you know, people that run the show. You just come in once in a while, make sure everything's going on all right. And
yeah, I mean, he's probably
he's a great businessman.
He's probably good at telling people what to do, which is what you need to.
Like
run.
Come in, have a meeting with the board. You know, make that little constipated face. Stomp around for 30 seconds and walk out.
So I mean, even in, you know, having those leadership qualities, there is something to some degree, you know, being presidential about that. You know, in that you can manage an organization. I'm not saying I would ever.
How's managing a business the same as managing government entities?
No, it's not the same thing. But you know,
I mean,
like,
if that were the case, Mitt Romney would have, you know, become president if that's what people wanted.
I actually don't think someone with Mitt Romney's
background. He's a much better businessman than Trump.
No, absolutely. I mean, with someone like, if Mitt Romney had different ideas, I think he would have been a great guy. I mean, to have government experience and successful business experience, I think that's, those are two great assets. I mean, he was kind of a lukewarm governor of Massachusetts, but if he was actually, I mean, he just used that as a stepping stone to run for president. If he took it seriously.
No, I agree that Romney would have been all right, but my point is that, first of all, I don't think Trump is a good businessman, but even if he were a good businessman, that's not what the people want, or they would have voted for Romney. That's my point.
Right. I mean, no, you're arguing what the people want. I'm saying, in my opinion, what would be good, like, acceptable experience for being the president. I think Romney had...
Dude, compared to these candidates, Romney, I would pray for Romney right now.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't vote for him, just because I disagree with him on...
I mean, I would vote for him as a candidate on the Republican side. I wouldn't vote for him. But...
Yeah.
He is far and away better than the candidates that we have on the Republican side.
Yeah.
But... the point remains.
Yeah.
Point remains, Muslims can't vote for Republicans.
It's not gonna happen anytime.
They don't want our votes, so why
no,
they
don't
want
to? You know who really does want Muslim votes, though? Marno Mali.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, he's looking for every Muslim in this country to find them, campaign in front of them, and to get them.
I don't know what he thinks he's going to get if he gets the Muslim vote. He's not going to get
him. But I do like him.
I love him.
He's got a lot of good things to say, you know, and I don't know, he seems trustworthy.
He seems
likable.
That's so awesome about the Democrats. That's so awesome about the Democrats. They will not demonize any community. Yeah. They will not, and even if it's like some outside group that happens to belong to the same religion or something, they will go out of their way to differentiate between the two, to make a clear distinction. to not use any term, any general terms that can be applied to both sides. They will go out of their way to say that group is completely different than our Muslims, American Muslims, or even any other Muslim around the world. That group is different. Republicans are just so cavalier. So, I mean, cavalier, is that the right word?
Yeah.
That means a good thing, right? Or they're so, just like, reckless.
Not caring.
But yeah, they're cavalier, but I think they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, they're playing on the fear card. I mean, you know, this is the way. I mean, to be able to control mass amounts of people, sometimes you need fear, sometimes you need other things, and playing the fear card brings people together.
You know, so the Prime Minister of India right now, his name is Narendra Modi. And he used to be the governor of Gujarat, and there was this mosque. I think it was in Gujarat, or actually in South India. Okay, it was called the Babri Masjid, and after the Babur, Mughal Emperor Babur. So some Hindu extremists believe that that was the site where I believe Krishna was born. Okay, there's like zero archaeological evidence to support that, but they say that's what they believe. Now they destroyed that mosque. Okay, and then around that same time there were pogroms happening in Gujarat. So meaning because of the issue of that mosque, Babri Masjid, the issue of Islamophobia came up in India, and it has a terrible history of Muslims suffering, you know, being such a dispersed minority, even though they're 14% of the population. So in Gujarat, where Narendra Modi was the governor, there are, I don't want to say rumors, but there's a lot of evidence to support that he was either behind pogroms. You guys know what pogroms are, right? Pogroms? So pogroms are like what happened to the Jews in Nazi Germany before the Holocaust, where they would just, you know, go to Jewish businesses, destroy the businesses, mobs would, you know, kill people in the streets and just leave the bodies and run away, and just to send a message.
Just to incite things.
Just to incite things, exactly. Just so
like anti-one ethnicity riot, basically.
Yeah, or yeah. Really. Where they would just go out in the street publicly, massacre people. That's a pogrom. So in Gujarat, these pogroms were happening in one go, in a matter of a couple of days, 2,000 Muslims died in India. And Narendra Modi's response was kind of like, well, what do you expect? What do you expect? You know, he referenced the Babri Masjid and said, you know, people are upset about, you know, that this masjid was there where our God was born. And what do you expect to happen? So, you know, that's an example of someone not being careful with their words and almost to a degree accepting the consequences of
legitimizing
what would happen. So the Republicans haven't, in my opinion, some have. Lindsey Graham, I feel, has. But like the front runners have not, you know, separated the two. They have not separated. They haven't even identified or acknowledged Islamophobia as a real thing. In fact, in the first debate, Mike Huckabee, who I hate now, talked about, or even forget Huckabee, Rubio, just a few days before the debate, was on CNN or MSNBC and was saying, you know, if Islamophobia is a real thing, how come we haven't heard about, you know, attacks on Muslims in America? You know,
and it happened, getting burned down. And
well, it actually happened the day after then.
Right.
Right. So that was what they were talking about. That was funny because he said it one day.
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't heard any of these attacks, and then second day, there were attacks.
No, but is he's not dumb. Do you think he's just ill-informed?
I mean, there were attacks before that. It's not like there weren't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think the operative word in there was, when he said widespread, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Rubio's whole thing that, where's the evidence of widespread Islamophobia?
Yeah, even if he was trying to use that word, widespread, there are widespread.
That's not what it was. What he said was that
could be an argument made that, yeah, there's a mosque here and there, but if you're talking about a couple of cases versus...
No. So when something is widespread, it means...
Not widespread.
No. When you say widespread, it means a similar style of attack happening in multiple places that aren't related to each other. So like a mosque in San Antonio...
How is that widespread? Dude, something happened in three separate places, that's widespread?
Yeah, if they're happening on a consistent basis.
Someone robbed a Valero in three different areas, in one in San Antonio, one in Austin, and one in Dallas. Now you have widespread
Valero
robbery.
Not if they happen one time. If they keep happening, then that is widespread. But
well, that's my point. I mean, you had a couple of different like mosque attacks and things like that. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Sure.
I think that was where he was like kind of asking, where is the widespread? Yeah,
so
there were a couple of cases, but...
So here's an example of widespread. Maybe a lot of things haven't necessarily happened, but how many imams in this country have received death threats?
That's
lots. I mean, I have a distant relative who's an imam in a very small town. He's received multiple death threats. And he just considers that as part of his job. I don't know if any have been received at the masjid here in San Antonio.
I don't know.
But I mean, I can look at that and act of hate. There are plenty of pig heads that have been thrown at masjid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Plenty of people have graffitied masjid. Plenty of people have burned down masjid. Like, it's... it's not like... I think it's enough to call it widespread. I don't think it's just, like, here and there.
No, but even then, why is Marco Rubio introducing this word widespread? Does it matter if it's widespread? It's happening a lot. Isn't that enough to condemn it?
If I recall...
I think getting down to that semantic level, it's just silly. I mean, it's happening. At what level? I mean, does it matter? It's not insignificant. It matters. It's obviously enough to be important enough to talk about, so... Why are you trying to distinguish between if it's widespread or not widespread? I agree.
I mean, it's not going to be as widespread as, like, racism against, say, black people, because there aren't as many Muslims as there are black people in the United States.
And I think black people just suffer more.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, you know, percentage-wise, I'm sure it's a much bigger percentage of the Muslim population versus the whole Black Lives Matter, you know. But, yeah, there are a lot more, obviously, black African-American people. So, yeah, there's more cases of that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as the Rubio thing was, he said that he doesn't know of... any Islamophobia, widespread Islamophobia that's happened, and widespread not being the operative word, Islamophobia in general is what I think he was talking about, and the next day, Trump said he wanted to ban all Muslims. So literally, it was like, that was the answer to what he was asking the question.
Yeah, where's the widespread Islamophobia?
And here's
your own party's front runner
saying,
you know, giving Islamophobia.
The two front runners.
And
Cruz
people,
also said that.
But it was really Trump. So when Trump says it, he's got the highest numbers, and people made fun of Rubio, like, remember what you were asking for? Here it is, next day.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. Islamophobia was obviously the, if you look at it that way, but if you have the leading candidate in your party, the top two candidates talking about it, and now on top of that you have all of the mustard stuff happening and the death threats and all that, well, at that point, yeah, it's widespread and Islamophobia. But I guess you're getting into semantics. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know? It is an issue. It doesn't matter if it's widespread or not.
So I think so far we've covered the election or the debate pretty thoroughly, and we managed to squeeze in a non-related topic, Sufism and Star Wars. I think that's enough to call it a night. You guys want to sign off?
I think so.
Ready? More calls, please.